Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharicana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram. Today, we are joined by our guest, Robin Smith. Robin has researched her family and others for over 25 years. An engineer by day, Robin applies those research and problem-solving skills to the field of genealogy. She specializes in Maryland court records, African-American, and slavery research.
From 2008 to 2012, Robin taught an advanced African-American genealogy class at Howard Community College in Columbia, Maryland. Robin has lectured widely at regional and national conferences and has taught at the Maryland Genealogical Society, the Maryland State Archives, and the Reginald Lewis Museum. Robin writes extensively and for more than 10 years has authored a popular genealogy teaching blog called Reclaiming Kin. Robin Smith, we are so excited and happy to welcome you to Speak On It.
I am so happy to be here. It's a pleasure. And I'm just glad that you invited me today.
Yes, welcome. And let's jump right in. So Reclaiming Kin, taking back what was once lost, is a heading on your website. Can you share with our listeners the reason why you created your very popular website?
So the title comes really from the deepest feeling that I have about this work, that I'm taking back lost family memory. I created the blog to share with other researchers the things that I learned and the things that I'm learning. I'm naturally a teacher, and so I really wanted to help others along their journey and really save people the thing that they can't get back, which is time. If they can learn about a new record set and how to use it, or learn about a new research skill or strategy to help them over their brick walls, then I wanted to be a resource to do that. That's really where it comes from.
So the majority of our listeners are very passionate about researching their family history based on the feedback that's been shared with us. On your website, you have a section called Genealogy Skill Building. Please give us a few tips that would be helpful to a family genealogist regarding this.
Okay. Thank you for noticing that. The two goals of Reclaiming Kin are to grow genealogical skills overall for everyone and to research, to better understand researching slavery and researching the enslaved. So all of my blog posts are designed to fit into those two goals. Three of the tips that come to mind are first, reading more books and reading more case studies. You know, I say this all the time, and I know it's boring and people don't want to hear it and people don't want to read, but it's really the advice that's going to take your research to the next level. You know, taking some time to build a genealogical library in your home, having some of those core books like American Genealogy and The Source and some of the other books that are out there, and especially reading case studies of how did other genealogists solve their problem. Right. I think people think that if the location or the surname doesn't match, that it's not relevant to them. And it really doesn't matter what the surname is, who it is. It matters how did the person solve the problem. So number one, reading, to do more reading of these books and do more reading of these case studies. That's my first big growing your skills tip. The second one is to try not to be tied so much to digital and online databases. I mean, those have really, I mean, Ancestry and Family Search and all those things, really helpful. I couldn't do without them. There's probably stuff I couldn't have found if I didn't have them, but they're really just a tool at the end of the day. And so you've really got to expand your view to understand that you need to get out into those archives, into those courthouses, into those cemeteries, into those genealogical and historical societies to really understand that there's going to be a lot of information you miss if you're not conscious of the fact that you've got to get away from your computer. And the last one is learning the strategy of cluster research. That is by far the single research strategy that will pay off again and again and again on all branches of your tree in every time frame. So I have lots of skill building posts on the site, from finding people in the censuses, proving identity, and evaluating evidence. So your listeners, I invite you to come to this site and actually find all the other posts that I have about growing your skills.
Those are excellent.
For people who don't know what cluster research is, can you explain that?
Sure. So cluster research is the concept of understanding that your ancestors were not sort of floating alone by themselves in any place and time, that they were tied to extended family, to associates, and to neighbors. And so when you train yourself to always be noticing and paying attention to all the other people that they're associating with, what you're going to find is some of those people are going to be family members whose names aren't familiar to you. And some of those people can be used to actually research your family tree and push it further back in time. You're going to do it through those other people. So that's the concept of cluster research. You might also hear it being referred to as the fan club.
Right. And what is the fan club for our listeners?
Family, associates, and neighbors. And so genealogist Elizabeth Shone Mills created that terminology. And it's a nice kind of shorthand way to encapsulate what it means.
Very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. Robin, what are two major highlights in your personal genealogy journey that had a major impact on you?
Wow, I have dozens of stories. You know, I imagine if I had a bunch of kids, I would be like asking which of your kids is your favorite. Any genealogist knows we have so many of those stories. So to just pick two, the first would definitely be the time that I was getting ready to leave a family cemetery in Tennessee. I'd spent several hours in the heat documenting the names and the headstones, and I was tired, and it was, you know, it's time to go. And so my cousin, I get in the car and we're getting ready to drive off, and she notices that there's a headstone that has fallen, that is flat on the ground. She's like, you're gonna jump out and get that one. And there was about 5 seconds where I almost said, nah, I got enough. But something said, nah, okay, I'm gonna get out, I'm gonna go get this one. And of course that headstone was from my third great grandmother. It was the oldest headstone in the cemetery. So, you know, those kind of moments kind of puts chills up your back because you kind of know, you know, they're kind of leading you to finding this record. And the second time would definitely be the time that I received a cache of historic family photos that my great-grandmother owned. And no one knew who the people were, but one of the pictures was clearly a school picture, and it was really, really old, and it was broken. And so I only had one half of the picture, and there was no one I could recognize in that one half. And I used to say to myself all the time, because I love historic photographs, as you can see,
yeah. You know,
but I used to say all the time that I wish I had the other half of that picture. So fast forward a few years in the future, I connect with some living descendants in Michigan. I'm a big fan of finding living descendants. And so I came, you know, as per my norm with my scanner in tow. I bring my scanner and they're giving me pictures and they're giving me funeral programs and I'm scanning away. And what do I find? They had the exact same picture, but they had the complete picture.
Wow.
And that picture showed my great grandmother at maybe 6 or 7 years old. She was in that school and the hat, you know, the whole picture, I could see her. And it was just another one of those moments where your heart just, you know, skips a beat like, oh my goodness. So, you know, those are the kind of things that really inspire us. And those kind of experiences are really deeply meaningful to me. I will say I find this work to be spiritual work, and I don't know how else to explain it. You know, this is why you have to have genealogy friends to call when you're excited, because of course your family is going to think you're crazy after a couple of years, you know, And they're not, they might not understand, but your genealogy buddies that you learn and that you meet in genealogy groups are going to understand how excited you are. So those are just two of the stories that meant a lot to me.
Beautiful. Those are two really touching stories. And I, your point, two points, one with living descendants. I know for me personally, that has really changed my life. And I connect it with cousins, you know, and they feel like, I'm like, man, I wish I had her growing up. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I wish I had. And it's just, you know, and being able to make these new memories, despite the fact that the family, you know, broke up for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And then your point about pictures, because I'm looking for a picture of my great grandmother, and she passed away before I was born. Mm-hmm. She basically was institutionalized in and out, and she was married to my great grandfather. They had four children. You know, we don't know like the full story of what happened, and I have no idea what she looks like. And, you know, everyone that I've connected with, you know, no one has a picture of her. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that, you know, I will have a similar story to yours, and that, you know, through the connecting and through the research, I will hopefully find a cousin out there somewhere, someone who has a picture of her, because that would just really just be so meaningful and totally blow my mind. So
it's coming. It's coming. Yes. And we're going to speak it into being. It's coming. Yes, and it's going to happen.
I received that. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And I'll throw this in here real quick. I just did a research trip to Tennessee for the first time, you know, since COVID, and, you know, I had been itching to get back in the archives. And my maternal family is from Tennessee, and I wanted to go to their brand new state archives, which I did. And I was there first thing in the morning, 8 o'clock when they opened up, because I had one day there, you know. Mm-hmm. But speaking about pictures, so I was visiting a cousin who's elderly. I had my scanner in my suitcase. I'm scanning all these pictures. My most recent post on Reclaiming Kin is about two men who I thought were two separate men, and they ended up being the same man. It's about proving identity. Do you know that this cousin had pictures of those two men?
Wow.
She had no idea who those people were. But again, another moment that tells me I was meant to do this. I was chosen to do this. This is about something deeper and more meaningful than I can even imagine. So, yeah.
Right. You made a comment about this work is spiritual. And I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Evelyn McDowell. Mm-hmm. She runs, is the founder rather, of Sons and Daughters of the U.S. Middle Passage. And mm-hmm. she made that statement a few years ago, and I latched onto it. And so many of our experiences, it's confirmed, you know, this just didn't happen.
Yes.
It was meant to be. And so, like, as a person of faith, I believe that it's God. And I also believe that it's also our ancestors that help us. When we go looking for them, we'll find
Me
them.
Too.
And so just like you encouraged, Shara Khan, and you said that picture is coming. I believe that it's coming. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the way that things happen or the way they reveal themselves, mm-hmm. you know, nobody could have orchestrated.
It couldn't have been. How could they have orchestrated that I'm there and I just did a post on these two men? I mean, right, that right. was so, you know, I mean, it was just, it's just verification and validation that you're on the right path and that you're, you know, it's like the African griot. You know, I really do believe there's one chosen in every generation in the family. You know, to kind of seek out this information and record it, document it, so that in the future we'll have fewer, you know, disconnected families, you know, who don't even have a memory of being related, you know. So that's the work we're doing. And I agree with you, Janice, wholeheartedly.
You know, you said back to this work being spiritual and the picture and the two men. One of my favorite stories to share is this gentleman. I was doing some research rather, and I have a cousin who he just recently retired, but he's a professor, was a professor at Shaw University in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing some research, and this now is going into like 1:30 in the morning. And I could not believe it. And wasn't really, but I feel sometimes I feel like the records find us or mm-hmm. circumstances or information mm-hmm. that we need, they find us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we have two ancestors, a father and a son, that were professors at Shaw University. Mm-hmm. So I did all the research I could do, printed all the material out, And I emailed it to my cousin, who was a professor at that time at Shaw University. He printed everything out. The next morning, he went to share it with his colleagues. He was just so excited. So he's waiting for this one lady outside of her office, and there was a bulletin board. So he's reading through his paperwork. Then he looks up at the bulletin board. He looks down at the paperwork again, and he told me, I felt as if I were in the Twilight Zone. All of the information that I sent to him was on the bulletin board. Here's the kicker. This was the thing. Shaw University was highlighting a mother and a daughter who currently teach at university, and mm-hmm. then a father and a son in the past that taught at the university. And that father and son were his ancestors, were our ancestors. So that's why whenever somebody else says this work is spiritual, that's what stands out for me.
Yes.
So moving forward, genealogy methodology, we know this is important, but what does it really mean when it comes to researching your family history? Now, I know a lot of people who've been doing it for a while, they may know what it means, but if you're a beginner, it's like, wait a minute, what do you mean methodology? So right. Can you share with us?
So I use that term to mean that you're going to have greater success when you have a method, a process that you're using in your research. When you develop research questions that you're trying to answer, when you develop a research plan, you know, those kinds of steps, that's really why the genealogical proof standard, or the GPS for short, is really so important. And I try to demystify it for readers on my site. The GPS, for those who don't know, is the standard for doing genealogy research. It's not just for professionals, it's for everyone. So if you have a long-term commitment to doing this work, the GPS is your playbook. It's your guide. And so if you use it, you're not going to have as many of those times where you're stuck and you have nowhere to go. So if you think about it, a lot of people who start research now, they kind of do a lot of online ancestry searches, and they get all this low-hanging fruit. They just put the name in and all these records come to them. The problem is that that's going to run out, right? And you're not going to be getting records that tell you answers. And so where do you go from there? What do you do? And so if you don't learn how to actually research instead of just searching, you know, when I say search, I mean, putting a name in a search box, that's not research. Research is something very different. And so learning the GPS is something I try to ease readers into. A lot of times I'm kind of teaching it to them on the slide, because my blog post is really teaching you one of the steps without saying it. So I that's something that I try to encourage. And that's what I mean when I talk about methods and process. And there's so many great genealogical teachers out there. And I'm a teacher, but I'm also a forever student. So I take classes all the time. You know, I sign in, especially with, you know, in this era of COVID, where you can kind of log into classes all over the country. There's probably no week that goes by that I haven't taken a new class. So I'm always trying to learn and always trying to pass on what I've learned. So that's kind of what I mean by that.
And sharpen those skills. Mm-hmm. Before we get into our next question, how do you feel that your engineering background kind of complements and helps you in your research?
So I immediately saw the similarities, because in my work, I'm doing a lot of research.
Right.
And I'm doing a lot of independent research, but I'm also working as part of a team. So I'm already wired to do deep research, right? To go through sources and to get data and collect it and then share it with the team. So I think that's the biggest way it helps me, but also the critical thinking skills and drawing conclusions, right? So you don't want to have a conclusion without evidence. You know, if somebody tells me, some genealogist that I meet tells me a fact, they go, how do you know that? You know, right. And, you know, a lot of people kind of pause, you know, because really the answer is ancestry told them that, you know. And so I'm trying to encourage people to kind of learn the language of what we're doing, learn what evidence is, learn what proof is, those words have meaning in genealogy that are very specific. But engineering, I've also found that there are a lot of engineers, retired and technical people in technology period, who mm-hmm. are doing genealogy, especially when I see people using spreadsheets. You know, that's the telltale. When I see an Excel spreadsheet, I'm always like, were you an engineer? They go, yeah, how'd you know that? So some of those kind of tell on themselves, but I think it's really uniquely helped to prepare me for the rigors of genealogy.
Yes, I can tell in the way you explain it, and you know, it complements perfectly. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful, you know, relationship in that way. So we touched on cluster research a little bit, but on your blog, you have cluster research about at the cemetery. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what that means?
So again, going back to Elizabeth Shawn Mills, who, I mean, she's just one of the people that I've learned so much from over the years. She has a one of these sheets that you can actually purchase. It's like a, I don't know what you call it. It's a laminated sheet. And it talks about all of the kinds of records that you can do cluster research in. So cluster research is not something you can just apply to census. So anything that any source that involves lists of people, you can use clustering in, right? Mm-hmm. Tax records, voter records, just everything. So, but I thought that the clustering at the cemetery was very novel. And so it's the principle of noticing who's buried around your person of interest. So, you know, you go to a cemetery with your surname, and you tend to only copy the people that you know with that surname, and you ignore all the other people. But it's the concept of documenting and focusing on the people in proximity, buried in proximity, because they are often relatives. And so using that concept, I went back to this family cemetery that's in Maryland, you know, where I live. And sure enough, I found all these family members that I had not noticed the first time that I came to that cemetery. And, you know, in one of my presentations, I have a picture and I show, you know, with arrows, all those people were right in front of my eyes, but they were buried under different surnames.
Right.
You know, it could be, you don't know that if you don't know the maiden name of the wife, look at those headstones. You know, if you don't know who the siblings or the daughters married, look at those headstones. So, cluster research proves very, very valuable, even in cemeteries.
Mm. That's a really good point, especially with the maiden names, because yes. that often gets lost to time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have two female ancestors that are like that, and we cannot figure out, like, we're still trying to figure out what her maiden name is, because for one of them, she's associated with like three or four last names. So, you know, those are the ancestors in particular where it's very helpful to, you know, do that boots on the ground research and go to the archives, go to the cemeteries to really get the answer. So
Cherokana, I also have a post called Finding the Maiden Name.
Okay.
Where
okay.
I give more strategies that you can use, you know, to trying to find that. Because of course, if you can't find it, that whole branch is lost to you.
It's lost, exactly.
And I certainly, like everyone, have certain lines of my family that I've been more successful on. And I have others that I'm just, you know, stuck. There's a lack of records or a lack of the maiden name, or there's been a migration out of state and you don't know which county they came from, you know, so that happens to all of us. So every tool we can put in the toolbox helps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've got a couple of genealogy research trips I need to plan. So
that's a great research trip.
Yes, yes. I'm looking forward to it. So maybe not 2022, but hopefully 2023, I think it'll happen. So
Robin, your website is outstanding with all of the resources that you make available. In preparing for our interview, I had to tell myself, I was like, okay, stop. You keep going down the rabbit hole. So there were just so, all of the stories that you shared, there are just so many lessons. So definitely encourage folks to visit your website. So what is next for Robin Smith?
So two of my immediate goals are, I'm working on bringing my class online. So the class that you mentioned that I used to teach at the community college, once I became a mother, I couldn't really keep up because I was getting home at 10 o'clock. So I wasn't able to still do it. But now with Zoom opening up so many more opportunities, I've been doing webinars, as both of you all know, from since last year, from just through my website. And so what I want to do is prepare probably between 4 to 5 modules and bring that class online for a small, just a select group of people that I can have a deeper, kind of more focused learning experience with. And the other thing is that I'm continuing to write and publish articles about my family. so this hard work can be discovered by future generations. And I really don't want to leave without encouraging your listeners to do the same. You got to stop researching long enough to actually write up what you've already discovered and submit it to your local or your state genealogical society publications. They will almost always take your article and publish it. And then that way you can guarantee that after you're gone and you're an ancestor, someone can find that article. And so you got to stop saying, well, you know, I'm trying to find this. Don't worry about that. Stop with what you have now, because continuing to push into the future, you'll never get something. One of my best friends would always say, better to write something now than nothing ever, right? Wow. Just write what you have. Don't get caught up trying to be Alex Haley and, you know, and, oh, I can't write. Don't worry about it. Just keep it just to the facts, you know? Write up what you found. Don't worry about it. Just get it documented. Because I'm always, you know, I kind of always have this thought that I'm going to slip on a banana peel. You know, I'm like, because my family is not going to keep all these boxes and files and folders and binders. That's going to 1-800 junk, even though I promised them that I'm going to haunt them when they do that. But, you know, if you don't get it in a format, which is usually an article that people can access, they're not going to keep all that stuff. They're not going to know what to do with it. So it's really beholden to us. And I really am very focused on writing at all times. I just had something published last month in the Tennessee Genealogical Society Journal on one of my families. And of course, you know, I include source citations. So mm-hmm. I want people to know where I got my information from. If I'm going to spend 25 years doing it, I want to do it properly. I don't want people to question my work and look at it and dismiss it because it looks like something that, you know, wasn't professionally done. So that's something I spend a lot of time on.
You're reminding me of Tania. She just did a webinar, I think it was on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And that was her main focus, that, you know, you have to write, you have to preserve, you have to dedicate. And I hope your stuff won't end up, your information, all that research won't end up on 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Hopefully you can find somebody else who's interested in taking it. But I'm challenged. You just challenged me and encouraged and inspired me, because I do a lot of research. I have a lot of information and I keep saying, okay, I've got to write about it. And I've been doing some writing, mm-hmm. but I love how you said, just write it. Kathy Marshall, she says the same thing, just do it. And how it's not a goal, it should be a mandate. All of that work that you have done should not be done in vain. No. And so you definitely want to preserve it. You know, my three words this year have been research, document, share. Research, document, share. After Thursday night, it was research, document, share, preserve. Mm-hmm. You know, like I have one section in the book that I'm working on is to my beloved children. Wanting them to know why, not just saying, okay, here's the information about the ancestors, but wanting them to know the impact that this work has had on me, and how Cher kind of said it earlier, how the one ancestor she was researching, how it changed her life. Mm-hmm. And somebody else said, I forget who, oh, I think it was Cheryl Will. She said, this work will bless your life. And so it's a blessing. It does change your life. My biggest thing with my family still is, you all didn't know this, because there's no one on the maternal or paternal side of my family. There's no one they never documented anything. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, how many children did they have? Oh, we think 8, my great grandparents. Maybe 12. Oh, and so being able to prepare a correct narrative for mm-hmm. the people coming behind us.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned Tania. I actually did a joint webinar with her a couple months ago. She's wonderful. I love her work. We did one on organizing, because if you can't get organized, you're going to be even more frustrated. And I've seen a lot of people stop researching, either because they're just stuck or they've got too much stuff. You know, it's reams of paper, they don't know where to go, and they're just exhausted. And so if you can't get organized and find some kind of process to organize your information, that's gonna get you there sooner rather than later. I love Tania's information, and particularly about photographs. You know, she's got a lot of really good information about photographs, but I can't stress the writing enough. I actually have a tab at my website that is family history articles that other people have written. And I asked my friends to allow me to host their articles when they write them so that you can get ideas. Right. So you can download the articles that I've written and that several of my friends allowed me to host at the site so that you can get ideas. Because people are like, oh, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to, you know, get some ideas. That's what I do. I read all these case studies. Oh, that's a great idea. You know, talk about the geography, talk about the locality, talk about the local environment, talk about, you know, my ancestors who lived in Tennessee, right at the Tennessee River. That river greatly influenced the lives of everyone in that community. My ancestors on the eastern shore of Maryland, what kind of, you know, occupations they had. They worked on the water. They were oystermen. So there's so much that you can add. And I have found at family reunions, my family is more interested when I add that social and that community history. I know I'm name dropping here, but you know how much I love Melvin Collier. So he and I did one earlier this year on social and community history. So
thank you. I don't want to interject and ask that question because I was coming.
Yes, you were coming for me. I knew where you were going. So you know, nobody wants to read Born, Mary, Died, right? You gotta add some other stuff. Recently, I was reviewing one branch of my family in D.C. and one of the people got married to a man in Oklahoma and moved to Tulsa. And it dawned on me looking at that census that this is 1920 and that they would have been there for the Tulsa race riot because her husband was a merchant in the middle of the Tulsa Black community. Whoa. That blew my mind yesterday. Like I hadn't noticed that before. But that kind of information, when you add that kind of history, is what's going to make it come alive and make it interesting to your family.
Now, it's funny, interesting you said about 1-800-DRUNK. Going back to that, mm-hmm. Because something that you mentioned, I'm going to ask you this off the air.
Okay.
You know, okay. Related to somebody, because when you said DC and Oklahoma, so we're going to talk about that. But mm-hmm. your point about 1-800-JUNK, it was funny, but that's real. And I think yes. what our point is too, as genealogists, we're always, you know, we're focused on the past a lot. Mm-hmm. But something that's been coming up with a lot of our guests too is like we need to also be responsible for the future, right? And whether it's writing living wills or, you know, future planning, or we find this property and that's in the family, but how do we keep it for future mm-hmm. generation? And it's the same thing with, you know, all of these papers that we accumulate and all these records we accumulate and, you know, making a plan for what's going to happen with that, because I think we take for granted the fact that, you know, we're interested in it. Our friends are interested in it, but like you said, oftentimes family members are not. And there's so many, like I get flashbacks of either like my experience or hearing from older relatives when the older relatives die mm-hmm. and they're at the house trying to clean everything. Mm-hmm. And if you're fortunate, you might find something and, you know, it falls into the, you know, quote unquote, correct hands, and they realize value in that. But it doesn't always happen that way. A lot of times things do just get thrown out. Unintentionally. So, you know, it's like, it's a real point. And it is something that we need to think about and how to plan for the future generations, because like you said, we will become ancestors too.
You think about these, I mean, it's really a cautionary tale, right? You think mm-hmm. about all these auction houses
yes.
and all these places. I used to go to Black memorabilia shows, reams and reams of photo albums of somebody's ancestors. How do you think they got them? Somebody junked it. Somebody junked it or went and sold it and said, take it all. You do have organizations who see the value in it and buy it. But again, you know, how did it get there? Because someone tossed it out. I, you know, even in my own family, I can remember one relative who, I don't know if I'm aging myself here. You remember those glass coffee tables where people would put pictures under the glass?
Yes.
And the whole table. When I was a kid, that was big in the 70s, right? I had an ancestor who had all these pictures. Guess what? Gone. Her one son, don't have any idea where they are. The truth is somebody probably just got rid of them. And those are the things that haunt me. I make sure that all the historical photos that I have, you know, maybe about 10 years ago, I copied them all on DVD and gave every family member a DVD because I want everyone to have every picture that I have. You know, I put them up on Flickr. Like I'm trying to get them out to the family because I don't want to be, you know, I have more, my collection is bigger, but I'm trying to preserve it. And so to make sure that you have multiple copies of right. it in your family. And you do have to either find someone in the next generation yeah. who's interested, who hopefully will take the baton further, you know, once you become an ancestor yourself. But the reality is that might not happen. That might not happen. You know, with the rise of social media, people are on to other things now. And so really the last course you might have is documenting it yourself and publishing it. And so I always feel like just, you know, I do mine by line. So each line, each surname, I go, okay, I'm going to write this up. And when I finish one, I start on the other. And my personal process is do the source citations first because they take the longest, right? So I do the long pole in the tent first, right? And then I go and write the article. But these are all realities we have to keep in mind. And it's unfortunate that it happens. But, you know, writing what you have and what you know today is the best protection against that.
Listen, I was talking to three older women. They may have been in their 80s. Maybe one was close to 90. And I met them at this crochet group. We were mm-hmm. doing something for the community. And the one lady started talking about, I was telling her about genealogy and how much I love it. And she was like, oh yeah, I have a lot of stuff. I just started throwing it away. I almost had a heart attack. And she was like, well, why? I was like, no, you can't do that. And she said, well, why not? I said, because somebody's going to come and they're going to be looking for it and doing the family history. And then there's going to be nothing. And yeah. I said, please don't do that. And I begged her. I said, if you can find somebody in your family, talk to people in your family and see if anyone's interested in history and give it to that person. Please don't get rid of another document. And when she was telling me what she had already thrown away, I was just like, wow. You know, so one of the questions is always that when I do presentations, when your descendants come looking for family history that, mm-hmm. or work that you've done, what are they going to find? Right. And what manner are they going to find it in? And so it's just so, it's so important. It is so important. And to actually have these conversations with your older relatives or people mm-hmm. you come in contact with, because people are throwing things away because they think it doesn't matter and no one's interested.
So another option, the cousin that I stayed with in Tennessee, another option obviously is to donate your papers to a local library. A lot of these libraries have a genealogy room, and they have vertical files. They have file folders on families. So do genealogical societies, historical societies, so do archives. So that's another resource. The woman that I was staying with, she's been done researching for a long time. And fortunately, she published all her research. So I was kind of going down there, obviously just to see her, but also to make sure that I had captured all the information that she had. She plans to give that information to the Memphis library. Now, of course, before you do that, you want to go through it. You know, you don't want to just give them reams and reams of paper, and because they're going to be less interested in it. You want to make sure you distill it down to a collection of documents that actually have data associated with them and information. Right. But that's another option, to actually donate your papers to a group that is interested in archiving the families.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that has come up quite a bit too with our guests. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We all need to take heed.
Very real. Very real. That's what I'm doing this weekend. As a matter of fact, you know, before this weekend, today, this whole week, next weekend, I'm in my organization process, and I'm scanning. I have a double-sided scanner. And so I digitize every piece of paper that I have. And then most of the piece of paper I toss out. So I only keep, you know, original photos, original family programs, you know, letters, things, memorabilia that can't be replaced. But right. stuff that I got online or copied at an archives, once I've digitized it, that piece of paper is gone because you've got to figure out how to not be staring at thousands of people, pieces of paper, and you just don't need it. If you've digitized it and you have a backup strategy, right? So don't just digitize it. Make sure,
right, Tania.
Sure, yep. Where that document is, that you got it backed up. At least three places is where it's supposed to live. So I have cloud backup, I have external hard drives, but it's something that I work on a little bit every day. Obviously, it's too big to do all at once. But if I spend an hour every day or half hour, you're going to make significant progress over 6 months.
It's interesting. It's like basically not a bad idea to have genealogical organization as part of our spring cleaning ritual.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It's something to think about.
Yeah, always.
So Robin, can you please share some parting words of inspiration with our listeners?
So the book that I published about my blog, I always write in many of those when I sign them, I believe the ancestors are saying, find me, remember me, tell my story. That's mm-hmm. actually what I think of. And this work is so powerful. We've already talked about that. Stay the course. So many people doubt their skills, and we are all capable of learning new research skills and breaking through your tough challenges. I really want people to hear that. For me, uncovering my enslaved ancestors' names and whatever tidbits I can glean about their lives, that's the greatest inspiration of all for me. So I'm going to use part of a quote that I have on the website. Slavery's reach is still with us. And part of the gift of doing African-American genealogy is recovering the stories of those caught in its grasp who could not in their own time leave their own witness. We are all leaving witness. That's what I would leave you with.
That is powerful, because I was going to put that as one of the questions. So it's amazing. Again, here's that spiritual piece mm-hmm. that you incorporated that in your closing.
Wow. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. And if you want to find additional information about Robin, you can check out her site, reclaimingkin.com. And we thank you for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Thank you.
Speak On It. You're welcome. Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure.